Comedians and jazz musicians have an obvious connection in that both count on great timing and improvisation. Comedian Paula Poundstone takes this connection one step further, improvising a major part of her live shows by interacting with her audience the way jazz musicians play off members of their band. Peter Sagal, the host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, where Paula serves as a frequent panelist, says Paula is the funniest human he's ever known. And after spending an hour with her, I can tell you, I agree. As part of our 20th anniversary celebration, we're revisiting some of my favorite interviews. Today, my 2018 conversation with Paula. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. I've always thought that comedians have a very similar process to jazz musicians in terms of improvising, just doing stand-up, even if you have, unlike you, because you do obviously improvise so much, but even other stand-up comedians that have a program that they're going to do, there's very often that interaction with the audience, whether they want it or not. But in your case, you really, to me, seem like a jazz musician up there. So I'm curious about your process and how that developed, or if that was something that the minute you were doing stand-up, that you were very much this improvisational person who was feeding off the audience in that way.
Well, firstly, thank you. It's good company. Thank you. You know, when I first started in Boston in, I think, it might have been May of like 79, it was open mic is sort of the college, so to speak, for a stand-up comic. And I was doing open mic nights in Boston, and the comedy scene was really developing at that time. And there were still probably, you know, more comics, many more comics than there were slots to go on. And so the open mic night was red hot. We'd have a raucous crowd on, you know, on Wednesday nights at the Ding Ho in Inman Square in Cambridge. And everybody was, and the premise of an open mic night being that anybody who wanted to could go up for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. So because there were so many comics that wanted to go up, and because the audience sort of peaks at like 9 or 10 o'clock, and then after that it dwindles away exponentially with every act that goes on. So people were very touchy about that 5 minutes, you know, and I had a tendency to lose track of what I was doing and go over, and I could hear the knives sharpening in the back. I would often stay on stage just to protect myself from the angry comics. But so when I started out, I really tried hard to write out a 5 minute set, and I would practice it in my rooming house room where I lived, and I would time it, and then I would go on stage. And, you know, number one, I was scared, and so I would get nervous and sort of forget what it was I meant to say, regardless of how much I had memorized it in the week prior. I bussed tables for a living back then, and if you looked closely, you could often see my lips moving while I was bussing tables because I was memorizing my act. And but I would go on and forget what I was going to do, or I would get distracted by something that I saw on the way up or something that the last comic said. And then I would respond to that. And next thing you know, I don't know where I am in the 5 minutes. And so my original take on that was that this was very unprofessional. It was very bad that I would say things that I didn't plan on saying was bad. And I don't know at what point it occurred to me that a lot of times the funniest thing I said the whole time was the stuff I hadn't planned to say. Mm. And when I finally realized that, I sort of cut myself loose and purposely, I went towards the light. I went towards the fun stuff. I mean, I have an act. I've been doing this job for 39 years. So somewhere in my head, 39 years of material is rattling around. But my favorite part of the night is just talking to the audience. I do the time-honored, where are you from? What do you do for a living? And in this way, little biographies of audience members emerge, and I kind of use that from which to set my sails. Seems to be working so far.
Thank you, sir. What do you do for a living, sir? You're a print broker? You sell printing? What do you mean? What? Like books? Yes, I know books. What am I, an idiot, Mr. Folded Arm Attitude? You hear what he said? He said, you know, like books? Yeah, I know books. And then he kind of folded his hands out to show me a book. Like as though I couldn't understand it without the hand signal. Yes. Oh, books. Yes. Yes. Okay, did you work today? Yeah. Okay. What's the name of the company you work?
Partnership Resources.
What is it?
Partnership Resources.
Oh, this is a tough one in this town. Partnership Resources. Do you mean partner, like when more than one person works on a project? Okay, that would be partnership. I assume you don't sell R's. That's got to keep the printing costs down for the consumer. Partnership Resources. Partnership. Come on, what is in the title? You're not trained to pronounce it? Partnership. How long have you worked at Partnership Resources? Apparently you missed orientation day.
I'm thinking about jazz musicians I know, myself included, that are almost incapable of doing the same thing the same way. And that's what I'm getting from you, that was really hard for you. And I think it was, and
it gives me misery.
Me too.
In television, when you do those late night shows, you know, or in the old days anyways, they used to, they would want to know what you were going to say. So, I would write out what I was going to say, and I would try like hell to stick to it. And almost all of those sets, I cringe when I see them. Because I'm like, part of it was I'd get so nervous about having to say the same thing.
Right.
That it was an effort to remember it. and that was a problem to start with. But also it's just not me. And finally, on Craig Ferguson, when he was doing his really terrific late night show, they used to say to me, they'd make me write out what I was going to say so they'd give it to the censors. And then they would go, say whatever you want.
No.
It's just so, you know, once I was, you know, unbridled.
Right.
And I'm sure that here's a little known fact about me, which is that I am a drum student and a very bad one.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. For the last couple of years, I've taken drums. And I started because my son, who played for 10 years, mm-hmm. He had this terrific teacher. And then my son sadly succumbed to, through no fault of his own, electronics addiction, which is a real thing and a very serious problem. And he got to where he just wouldn't do anything anymore. Mm. And as I still believed that I could sort of snap him out of it, the last act, you know, of a kid who had a very busy life prior to this problem, the last thing that he was still doing was playing the drums. So he got to a point where he wouldn't even get out of bed. So I said to the drum teacher, I go, look at, you know, come anyways. Because you can talk him into taking the lesson. And that worked a couple of times. And then it became clear to me that it wasn't going to work anymore. So I said to the drum teacher, because we had 6 o'clock on Wednesday nights, and I desperately didn't want to lose that slot. So I said to the drum teacher, I said, come anyways. And if he won't take the lesson, I will. Because I wanted to hold him, you know, I wanted to keep that spot open for him for when he recovered. And, sadly, he never did recover, and that was probably, I don't know, 3 years ago, and I still take drum lessons at 6 o'clock on Wednesday nights. I'm still waiting for my son to come take over.
What kinds of music are you doing with your drumming? What are you doing?
I'm so bad. It's embarrassing.
But do you have a drum kit? A full drum kit?
Yeah.
This
ask
is
my
hilarious.
Neighbors. You know, you would think that my neighbors would pitch in and pay for my drum lessons because it's going to make their life better.
Yeah, the better you get.
Exactly.
I totally get it.
And
but they
summer's
have an
coming
offer.
On. When the windows are open, they haven't. They haven't offered. Odd, isn't it? It's funny because, you know, part of the reason I've continued, I mean, I'm not going to be a drummer, but I love the idea of being able to sit down and do something anyways. But part of the reason I've continued is because I believe it helps the brain. I volunteer in a nursing home a couple mornings a week, and music and the brain are just an astonishing thing. There are people that I lean down to their wheelchairs in the activities room and I say to them, do you have children? And they stare at me for a long time. Mm. And then they go, I'm not sure. Mm. And then I'll put on, you know, some Pete Seeger CD and by golly, those lips are moving. They sing along. They, you know, the music has some bizarre relationship with the memory and the brain.
Well, you know what I'm looking forward to is, with nobody knowing this since it's a little known fact, although now people are going to know because we're discussing it, but it's still going to be a surprise. My fantasy is next time you do The Tonight Show or something like that, that this is a real throwback. Because, you know, in the old days, they'd have Buddy Rich would tap dance or somebody would bring out some unexpected talent. You're just going to sashay over to the band and sit down and play along with the band. I see it coming. That's Gene Krupa on drums, not my guest, comedian Paula Poundstone, although she has been taking drum lessons for years. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. I told Paula that I think of her as a jazz comedian, and not just because she's a jazz fan, but because I see similarities in her process and the process of jazz musicians. Paula sees that connection made clear in her drum lessons.
In one of the books, right, that I, you know, let's say do page 18 and page 19 or whatever, right? One of them, there's a word for it, but I can't think of what it is. But it's like this answer, you know, call and answer thing.
Yeah, call and response. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And what's weird about it is that, I can play one, I don't even know what it's called, like one bar of it, and then the next bar makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I don't know why. You know what I mean? So
even
if I play it just like once, I actually know what the next thing will be because it makes sense. And in a way, I have to say stand-up is similar in that some of the things, I mean, it has to do with there are times where it's the timing with which you said it. And it almost doesn't matter what you said.
Exactly. That's very much like jazz.
If you just, you know, if you just get in there and throw something at that in that right moment. I remember one time I was on Wait, Don't Tell Me, which is a weekly news quiz show.
Oh, I'm a big fan.
NPR.
I know it.
Oh, thank you. Well, my boss, Peter Sagal, let's see. I think I might be wrong about who the guest was. I think it was like the head of the FBI or something, but this was many years ago. And Peter had asked him a question. He was on this section of the show called Not My Job.
Mm-hmm.
And so Peter had asked this guy like an interview kind of a question. And so the man was explaining something. He worked at the very least with George Bush, the second George Bush Jr., but he was he was trying to say something, and he said, well, George Bush didn't think. And he paused the wrong amount of time. And Peter and I swear, that this all happened in the wink of an eye. But we looked at each other, and we were like Harry Potter in the Goblet of Fire when him and Cedric Diggory see the silver cup at the same time and start to run for it. So the guy goes, you know, George Bush didn't think. And Peter and I look at each other, and I pretty much, not literally, but figuratively, shoved Peter Sagal out of the way to take the joke myself. But we both had the same thought at the exact same time. And the thing is, if you didn't say it quickly enough to fill that, you know, quarter note, so to speak.
Exactly.
Then it wasn't going to work.
Exactly.
And so what I learned about myself at that time is that I don't care who gets hurt.
Heard you a lot, of course, on the radio, but I've seen you in person as well, and I've watched how you will take something in one direction, then an audience member says something, and I watch you grab that and take it in another direction, and that's exactly what jazz musicians do. And if we have a group, you know, if you're playing solo, it's one thing, which is what you're doing, but if we have a group, we might be headed in one direction that we think with our improvisation, and then somebody else joins in with something, and you grab that, and you go off, or you get yourself in a corner. We call it a get-out. You know, you improvise yourself into a corner, then it's all about how you get out, and that's got to be a similar thing to what you're doing.
That.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
But, you know, I don't really consider, you know, I don't consider myself a solo performer exactly, because you're right, because the things that the audience bring to it, you know, my manager tells people all the time, she'll say, well, Paul knows who to talk to in the crowd. That is such a load of crap.
And you heard it here, people.
I have absolutely no idea who to talk. I mean, I sometimes talk to people because they're in my sight lines. They always ask me, or often before I go on, they go, well, do you want the lights on the audience? And I'm like, no, because they're going to feel like, you know, they're under interrogation.
Right.
No, I want them. They're more responsive when it's dark.
Mm-hmm.
But so sometimes someone has said something, And made an auditory, added in a word or two in their response as they were laughing or whatever to what I said. And that'll attract my attention, and I might talk to somebody. Or sometimes, you know, I don't know, somebody's got on a hat, or they're sitting funny or whatever. I just sort of grab people and talk to them. I don't have a technique mm-hmm. of finding anyone particularly scintillating. What I find... Once I've begun to talk to somebody and that little biography starts to develop, in some ways I feel like a conductor where, you know, when I return back to that person, I'm sort of bringing up the strings again and then you go over to the horns. But the truth is, anybody, it doesn't matter. You get somebody talking for a couple of seconds, a few minutes, and they're fascinating.
And I think that's true. And I love that you think that, because a lot of people don't. I don't think they're curious. And I think one of the most appealing things for me about watching you in action, if I can put it that way, is you are genuinely curious and interested in these people. And I think that would be a hard thing to fake.
There's one thing where I do glaze over a little bit. So when I say to somebody, I'll go, what do you do for a living? And they go, I'm a software developer. I do a little bit, like, I'm like, oh my God.
Where do I go?
And then I quickly go, what do you do in your free time?
Get it anywhere else.
Yeah, I got almost, you know, or I'll say, well, what's the software supposed to do? And it's always somehow involved in a more, you know, like, well, it's the software that goes into developing the software for the software.
Right.
For the software.
It's a real comedy killer.
Yeah, you really got to move away from that.
Well, I have to bring up Vince Giordano because I was delighted when we were off mic before we started with you saying that you love the music on Boardwalk Empire. And you love that music. You said you have the soundtrack from it. Talk about that.
Yeah. You know, I used to not watch, really since Radar left MASH, I had stopped watching any kind of primetime television.
That's a long time, Paula.
It's a very long time. And I, you know, I've never seen Seinfeld. I've never seen all the shows that everybody talks about. Mm. Never. But one night, because I have OCD, and if I start watching, I can't stop.
Yeah.
But one night I was in my hotel room. Now I'd watch the news or look for an old movie or an old sitcom on television. I just couldn't bring any new ones into my life. So I was in a hotel one night and I'm flipping around looking for an old sitcom or an old movie and I can't find it. But I stumble across mid season, and I don't even know what season it was, an episode of Boardwalk Empire. And first of all, it's so beautiful, even though it's very violent, but at the same time, it's a period piece. It's about the Irish mob during Prohibition. And it's so well done in every way that you cannot take your eyes off of it once you see it, or I couldn't. And so I told myself, you know, when I figured out what it was, you know, so that I knew where to look for it, I told myself, well, because I know I have this problem where I literally can't stop watching something and thinking about it, which is why I don't watch primetime TV. But I said to myself, I said, okay, I'll buy it on DVD and I'll only watch while I'm working out. And that worked really good for a little while. I'd go in the hotel. I'd bring my little DVD player down to the fitness room, and I'd walk on the silly steppy thingy with the headphones in. And then, of course, what happened, because it's that kind of serialized show where they leave you hanging, and it's just cruel to somebody like me who's so susceptible. So I would lower the bar. You know, first it was only while working out, and then it was only while eating Butterfingers, and then it was only while driving, and the next thing I knew, I just watched it over and over again. But part of the life's blood of this really brilliantly done show is the music.
Vince Giordano and the Nighthawks on Choo Choo from the soundtrack of the HBO series Boardwalk Empire. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Our show is made possible in part with generous support from Steinway & Sons. For a schedule of upcoming programs, visit our website at jazzinspired.com. You can listen to podcasts of Jazz Inspired wherever you get your podcasts. And email us at info@jazzinspired.com or visit us on Facebook and Twitter at Stride Queen. To find out more about my CDs, my music books, and my memoir, and where I'm touring when we get back to all that, and to sign up for our email newsletter, visit judycarmichael.com. Additional support for Jazz Inspired is provided by Jazz Times Magazine, providing entertaining and provocative coverage of the jazz scene since 1970. On the web at jazztimes.com. Today, we're revisiting my 2018 conversation with comedian Paula Poundstone.
My favorite thing in the entire world, I guess, is I give ping pong parties at my house in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And me and my daughter, Allie, tallied it up, and we think that I've given 70-something
over the years. Oh, my word.
And spanning over many, many years. And the way it works is we... people come to the party, we put names in a hat and we draw the names out for doubles partners and we have a tournament. And it's mostly just fun. Nobody plays all that great, but it's mostly just fun. But I used to have a CD player that had the 5 disc holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we used the same CDs for every party. One of them was the greatest hits of Louis Prima,
who's got to
be my favorite musician. Yeah, just every one of the songs on that album is great, but my favorite is Just a Gigolo.
And just a gigolo, and everywhere I go, people know the part I'm playing. Paid for every dance, selling his romance. Oh, what they see. There will come a day, and youth will pass away. What will they say about me? When the end comes, I know they'll say just a gigolo. Life goes on without me, and just a gigolo everywhere.
And the horn player Sam Butera is so great and so funny. He does a call and response thing with Sam, actually, and I can't even really tell who started it and who finished it. Sam will play something and Louis will sing something that sounds just like it, and Sam will play something again, or the other way around. Maybe Louis sings something and Sam plays it. It's like that parlor game where you can't tell who began the action.
Exactly, and you cannot be unhappy listening to Louis Prima.
No, you really can't.
So
you're
great.
You're absolutely right. I bring it with me to the nursing home I volunteer at. I bought them a bunch of CDs.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right. People come in and they forget their pain for at least a few seconds.
I'm so sad and lonely. sad and lonely, sad and lonely. Won't some sweet mama come take a chance with me? Cause I ain't so bad then.
And I'll sing her sweet love song. Oh, I love the time. She will only be, only be. Baldi bozi bat, blibop.
I ain't got nobody.
Oh, and there's nobody to kiss for me. There's nobody to kiss for me. Nobody.
I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. My guest is comedian Paula Poundstone. I asked Paula what inspired her new book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness, where she experiments with everything from Taekwondo to swing dancing to discover what can not only make a person happy, but keep them that way.
Well, I mean, who doesn't like the idea of going out and doing things that, you know, you think might make you happy?
Mm-hmm.
The truth is, it's sort of a backdoor way into yet another memoir. Because I'm big on memoir. My book is a series of experiments doing things that I or other people thought would make me happy. And every chapter is written as an experiment with the hypothesis and the variables and the conditions and field notes, etc. But the real question for me wasn't whether or not I would enjoy doing something. The real question for me was, what could I do that would leave me with a boost so that when I was done doing it, when I returned to my regular life, I still, you know, felt, I had a umbrella, so to speak, for the inevitable on and off rains of one's daily life. And so the analysis section of each chapter, which comes up repeatedly in each chapter,
mm-hmm.
Is the story of my regular life. So I check back in and I see if whatever it is I'm experimenting with is rubbing off on my regular of raising a house full of kids and animals and being a stand-up comic and just being stuck being me 24 hours a day.
Well, what I loved about it was that very thing, because there, you know, people will get this because they know you. They know you're funny. It has a great cover. You're in a lab coat and you have all kinds of arms and you're holding out different things. And so it's very funny, but there are self-help books. There are books to happiness. There's yoga books. There's all these things. And I always feel that most of them are implying that you're going to go off to the top of a mountain and meditate and get to that pure spot. And yours is really bringing it back into everyday life. And it has real meaning. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you. That's
no,
nice
very, very much. And I'll tell you, for someone else who tours a lot, who's out there, just confronting the things that we professionals do on the road, there were things that you said that I thought, you know, people would really like to read this, because we look at, even though we try to be realistic about it, know everybody has problems that they confront. I just loved hearing you talk about your agent saying, well, we're not selling tickets here. You've got to do this.
Geez,
you know,
yeah.
I loved all that. I thought this is really, it's like you're out there. This is the ping from the submarine that's out there to the rest of us and saying, I'm going through it too, people. And I'm going to do this, whatever this thing is that is going to make me happy. And one of them was swing dancing. You have to talk about that, because you had to. It brings it back to music, the music I love.
Well, I decided, I was out one day on the 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica, and it's one of those areas of town that will have the street musicians and that sort of thing. And I saw this group of people. They had recorded music. There wasn't a band there. It was recorded music. But they're playing this recorded music on the promenade, and all these people were swing dancing. And I was waiting for my kids to come out of some horrific store that I can no longer go into. and so I stood there and watched for a few minutes, and it looked like so much fun. It's this wonderful upbeat music, for one thing. And the people were really good at it, too. And it wasn't like a It wasn't a dance troupe. It was just regular people that knew there was a dance thing there at that time and came and joined in. And so I talked to one of the women that was there. I said, how did you learn to do this? And she said, well, there's a woman named Rusty Frank who has, you know, almost single-handedly in Los Angeles. She teaches swing dance lessons, and she has a night in Marina Del Rey or a couple nights a week or whatever, where she turns a Elks Lodge into, you know, Rusty's Rhythm Club. And she trains people to swing dance, and then they come and have these social dances. And she said that's how she learned. So I decided, I put that into my list of things that might make me happy, because there's upbeat music, mm-hmm. and that, of course, tends to, you know, lend to one's happiness. There's the physical exercise of the dancing, and there's social life. You know, all these people with big smiles on their faces doing this great thing. So I sign up for these group lessons. I was so bad that I was slowing the group down. So I had to switch to private lessons. And so there goes the social life. And then I was still so bad that my teacher couldn't use the upbeat music. I swing dance to the blues.
I do
the Charleston to Fire and Rain. Well, eventually, the way it worked out was my Rusty Frank, this wonderful mm-hmm. swing dance teacher. I used to go to her house for lessons for a long, long time. And for the chapter of my book, I would take as many lessons as I could, you know, scheduling wise, mm-hmm. in order to write this chapter. And my, you know, the sort of climax was that I would eventually go to this social dance. And somewhere along the way, I guess I noticed some tap shoes in her little studio. Mm. And I said, it turns out she's a tap dancer as well. So she started then teaching me, this part I didn't tell in the book, but the truth is she started then teaching me tap dance.
Oh, that's
as
fantastic.
Well. So now there's two kinds of dance that I don't do well. And but the, you know, part of the joy of it is the music. And she has, you know, she'll come to, now she comes to my house, but she'll bring on, you know, she has it all on her iPhone, and she brings a, you know, a little portable speaker. It's kind of amazing, really. And, you know, pushes that thing on, and away we go. And it's turned me on to all sorts of great music, actually.
The Harry Allen Joe Cohn Quartet on Pick Yourself Up. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. My guest, comedian Paula Poundstone, explored different activities to see if they would make her happy while doing research for her new book, The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. One of these activities was swing dancing, something she continues to enjoy to this day.
wonderful guy named Todd Murray.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of the name of this song. Oh, it's Could Ya,
mm-hmm.
I think is the name of the song he does. And I just love it. And so we used to use that to warm up a lot. We'd use this Could Ya song. You know, it's a love song. Rusty says all the swing dance music is either about food or love.
Well, what's not to like? That's perfect.
Right, exactly. So we'd always warm up to this song, you know. So one day we're there at my house in my what I refer to as the ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a teeny house. It's not really a ballroom. But, you know, we're in front of my coffin bookshelf. And this is where she puts her her music, and we're there on the little space of wood floor dancing. And she walks over to her music set up there, and she pushes a couple buttons, and she says, "Boy, isn't this odd? I can't get the Todd Murray song to play the right way." And she keeps pushing it, and it's coming on just the instrumental, not the vocals. And I don't know anything about that stuff. So I'm like, oh, I don't know why it's like that, you know. But so she puts it on and we start dancing to just the instrumental.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a second, the doorbell rings. And it was odd, but I wasn't quite sure what to make of it. She goes over and answers my front door. She opens the door and there stood in a tuxedo Todd Murray.
No, you're making this up.
No, isn't this the greatest story? So there stood Todd Murray, and he's now singing with the instrumental of the Could Ya song. And he came in and serenaded me.
Oh, you're making all this
no,
up.
No, isn't that wonderful?
Was this a birthday present or something?
No, it was just, you know, Rusty's one of those people who she was Facebook before Facebook was invented.
Mm.
She knows everybody,
right.
And she delights in, you know, hooking people up and introducing and blah, blah, blah.
I want to meet this person. Now, this sounds like this is a way to be happy. This brings happiness in. Just this experience is such a beautiful story.
Could you for an ice cream sundae? Could you for a smile or two? Would you say along about next Monday, keep a guy from feeling blue? Oh, could you for a big red apple? Could you for a Tootsie Roll? Would you for some Philadelphia scrapple, brighten up a lonely soul? I don't want to have the stars in my pocket or ride a rocket to the moon. I just want what I want when I see what I want, and I hope I get it soon. Could you for a peaceful valley? Could you for the Zuider Zee? Would you for a honeymoon in Bali? Could you fall in love with me? Could ya,
would ya,
would ya take a chance on romance?
Could ya
for a full-length saber?
And you mentioned something that I haven't thought about in a long time, but I have heard it, and I'm really glad you brought it up, the Dean Martin tune, The Money Burns a Hole in My Pocket.
Yeah, you know,
yeah, talk about Dean. I love Dean.
Well, I got this great 2-CD collection of Dean Martin music, and I bought it for the nursing home I volunteer at.
Mm-hmm.
I just am always looking for stuff that they might relate to or remember or whatever. And it's a very popular one there now when we put it on. And in it was a song I had never, I mean, I knew, you know, Pizza Pie.
Yeah,
I knew that. But most of it, I wasn't familiar with those songs at all. But one of my absolute favorites is this, and it's great Dean Martin stuff because it's got that sort of lazy lilt that he has.
Mm.
It's Money Burns a Hole in My Pocket. And it's, you know, of course, A, it's true, and B, it's a beautiful song.
Money burns a hole in my pocket. How I wish I had millions of dollars and nothing to do but just buy pretty presents for you. Money burns a hole in my pocket. How I wish I had oil wells in Texas to keep me supplied with money while I sit by your side. Every day of the week we would visit the store. All the beautiful things you seek would soon be yours. 'Cause money.
I have to quote you to you because I love the happiness is like a rogue piece of eggshell. That is so wonderful, Paula. I'm going to use that a lot. I love it. And I have to ask about your Get Wired experiment. Well, you call them all your experiments through this. I love how the chapters were put together. But of course, I related with so much of the Get Wired, which I think most people would. But talk about that, and your whole pursuit of that was fantastic.
Well, you know, I actually came to computers later than most people. Mm-hmm. We had the big kind of computer in my house. It was for the kids, you know, homework, and they used to play with CD-ROMs on it when they were little. And I had an assistant that used it. But honestly, here's how I used to answer email. My assistant would print the emails out and give them to me, and I would write my answer on the piece of paper and give it back to her. And I did that for a long time. And people kept saying to me, I'd already written a couple of books by the time I wrote this one. And I wrote them all by hand, you know, with a piece of paper and a pen. And I would give it to a typist. And people kept saying to me, oh, you know, you're going to love using a computer. You'd be so much happier if you used a computer. So that was one where, you know, I sort of drank the Kool-Aid, I guess, believing that this really, I sincerely thought that this was going to open up worlds to me the way we all thought that, right? Didn't we?
Exactly.
We thought it was going to change education. It was going to make our kids, you know, smarter and more connected and blah, blah, blah. And what's interesting is, so I wasn't coming at it from a negative place in any way. Mm-hmm. I totally believed that's what I was about to do for myself. And it was really a crash and burn kind of an experience.
Oh, this is so sad.
There were times where, you know, I would, you know, like if I could successfully, you know, post something, I got everything that the engineers and the designers hoped I would from it, which is a little bounce, a little dopamine hit. And then, you know, like a rat on a wheel looking for more.
No.
There was no, and the irony is that as I mentioned earlier, how the analysis part of each chapter was where I would check back in about how things were going in my regular life. So, and again, everything that happened in the book was a surprise to me. I didn't know what was going to happen in any of the experiments, but there's this sort of thread in it of my son slowly descending, or sometimes even quickly descending, into what turned out to be very severe electronics addiction, which is, as I said, a real thing. But at the time when we would try to seek help, no one recognized it. No one knew what I was talking about, supposedly in the world of professionals, that is. But so it was interesting when I went back to do the rewrite and I looked at it again because as I moved on to each chapter, I didn't look back at the last one. Mm. And as I said, it took several years to write this book. So when I went to do the rewrite, I was struck. By that time, the tentacles of screen devices and technology had really worked its way pretty solidly into my life. And I was struck when I looked back at that precipitous fall into, you know, looking for connection in a place where there is no real connection. And by the way, in terms of education, so it turns out. And I have to highly recommend a really terrific book called Screen Schooled, written by two high school teachers. What turns out to be is that brain development is done with paper and pencils and crayons and not screen devices at all. In fact, even reading, your brain, when you read from a paper, be it a newspaper, a book, a magazine, the information disseminates in your brain differently and more reliably than when you read from a screen device. Now, of course, I didn't know any of this at the time, but I was struck when I looked back at the chapter at how many times I used the word tired. How many times, to the degree, by the way, that my editor is like, she goes, you know, she would circle words that I used too much. The words lonely and tired were in that chapter more than any other, regardless of how challenging my life was during the different parts of writing the book.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really, it's.
Well, that's revealing.
It is revealing. And as it turns out, what works is a lot of the stuff that our parents told us, you know, go outside, get some exercise, call a friend. Those things work. The first chapter of the book is the Get Fit chapter.
Yes, I loved it.
and I took as many, I took Taekwondo and self-defense with this guy. And by the way, I have no passion for Taekwondo or self-defense. I did it because it was the closest workout place to my house.
No, and I love that most people take up walking or something like that. Yeah. You went into Taekwondo. I thought that was hilarious.
Well, you know, I needed to, you know, use the time as well as I as I thought that I could. And a lot of what I did, and now I've returned to the guy years later, actually. I went back to working out with him. At the time, I stopped after I finished the chapter for science. I stopped because I had to control the variables, so I moved on to the next thing. Mm. But I remember at one point, as I was taking notes, because that's what I would do. I would go to a class with this guy, and then I would come home and take notes so that I could write the experiment properly. And I remember one time I'm thinking, I got home and I thought, you know, first of all, it was a little bit pricey. And I thought, well, I don't want to tell people you have to spend a lot of money, you know, to be happy, because I don't think that's true, first of all. And I said to myself, though, okay, mostly what I do with the guy, not all, but a lot, is calisthenics, you know. So I said, what's to stop me from doing that at home? How come I go to a guy, right? What's the matter with me? So maybe the next day I go to the guy again and he says, do 500 rope jumps. And I did 500 rope jumps. And he says, do 30 push-ups. And I did 30 push-ups. And he says, do 100 sit-ups. And I did 100 sit-ups. And then I rolled over like ready to either cry or throw up. And he said, get up. And I thought, Mike, that's why I go to this guy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought of that on my own in a million years. Get up at that moment was the furthest thing from my mind. That's why I needed the guy.
That's why we all need that guy.
Yeah, it is. I think it is helpful to at least be, you know, with a friend or a group or, you know, and somehow to have yourself motivated. I mean, for those who can do it on their own, my hat's off to you. But exercise, you know what? It's helpful. It's definitely helpful for one's emotional well-being.
Well, and there you have it. That's the thing that you are saying, that it's exercise, get enough sleep, get outside, all of those. After all of that, you really found that those were the things that were true.
Yeah, and I hate to ever say that my parents were right about anything.
But were they right?
They were right about that. They were right about that. Yeah.
There you go. Well, they were right about important things then. That important, yeah. At least that important thing.
Yeah, yeah. I have to say that with my kids, I'm right about a lot more things than my parents were. I just, you know, it's not a race, but I'm winning.
Do your kids. It's not a race, but you're winning.
Yeah.
Do your kids realize that? Have you pointed that out to them?
I try not to because, you know, they're in that young adult phase where, you know, you'll lose them if you point it out too much.
But I think they're going to realize it. I think when they're on NPR doing their interview, they will say, you know, I realized that my mom got it right more than my grandparents.
Yeah, that's my hope. And maybe that's not a noble hope, but, You know,
honest hope.
It's after world peace.
I like it.
My hope is world peace and for everyone to have a home. But after that, maybe number five is, is for my kids at least to appreciate me, for heaven's sakes.
I think that's good. I love it. And Paula, thank you so much for doing this. It was great fun. I love the book.
Thank you.
The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. That's a pretty big thing to take on, and you did it.
Well, thank you very much. It was fun talking with you.
It was fantastic. Thank you.
You've been listening to my conversation with comedian Paula Poundstone. I hope you'll join me here next time when I talk with another celebrated creative person about how jazz has inspired their life and work. I'm Judy Carmichael, the host and producer of Jazz Inspired. My production engineer is Curtis Heidoff. You can download podcasts of Jazz Inspired from iTunes or at talkshoe.com. Our opening music was Airmail Special, and the mid-break music is a smooth one from my CD, High on Fats and Other Stuff. The closing music is Old Fashioned Love from my CD Trio. I'm on piano with Mike Hashem on sax and Chris Flory on guitar. Judy Carmichael's Jazz Inspired is made possible with generous support from our listeners and from Steinway & Sons and from Sag Harbor Florist. Visit sagharborflorist.net. For a schedule of upcoming programs, to sign up for our email newsletter, or to find out how you can personally support Jazz Inspired, visit our website at jazzinspired.com. You can email us at info@jazzinspired.com or visit us on Facebook and Twitter at Stride Queen. For more information, visit judycarmichael.com or jazzinspired.com.